What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
Hi there, it's Paul, and you're listening to What the Footy, the football business podcast that goes behind the scenes and gives fans, industry experts, athletes, aspiring sports professionals, and more unrivaled insight into football, business, and how the beautiful game is evolving. Here is what I have lined up for you today.
Athleticism and physicality is not only about size, you know. I think for me, the most important thing that you have to really see is the intensity. For me, I found that this is like an indicator that shows if a player can make it in the next level, I would say. And this is one thing that all of those players that I actually mentioned had.
I hope you love it. Not like it, I hope you love it. So if you're locked in and listening, give the pod a follow and a 5-star review and tell a friend to tell a friend. Let's go.
Knew Sam Allardyce liked me, but I didn't know it was to that extent.
Imagine being a kid in primary school, now supporting Arsenal.
Powerful people, and I think they need to recognise that, but then also they need to be represented the right way.
Sport in general is nothing without fans.
Based on, you know, one single source of revenue alone, that being the TV deal.
Also winning the league. Let's just win this to appease the fan.
Welcome to the What the Footy podcast, Mariella. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Paul. No, I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, I know we've been trying to do this for a while, but it's good to have you here. The transfer window's out of the way, so no, it's good. Question I always ask all the guests to start with is, what is football to you, a business or a sport, and why?
Yeah, I think we have to start with the basis that football is a sport, because, you know, football is not only what we see on TV or what we see in the big stadiums. For me, football is first and foremost what we see in the streets, in the parks, you know, like people having a ball and two posts, or maybe like two items that define the goal area. So that's football. Of course, when we're going a little bit in a higher level and we start talking about professional football, then yes, then it starts becoming a business and has to be managed with business principles, even more maybe, because, you know, that's the only way that we can have, we're able to have sustainable football organizations. So, yeah, I think that, you know, we definitely have to start with the basis that is a sport, because we're not talking only about professional football. But yeah, when we talk about professional football, it has to be both.
Yeah, no, 100%, and agree with what you've said there. Obviously, right now, you're head of emerging talent at Norwich City Football Club. But just sort of talk to me about your journey, getting to where you are now, and how your previous experiences have kind of helped and shaped you. Obviously, you started off working at Swansea under Gary Monk, and then progressed to be Norwich's first full-time female scout within the Premier League. Just sort of talk to me about what it was like working at Swansea and how that kind of prepared you for what you're doing right now.
Yeah, no, obviously I started at Swansea. It was my first job in professional football. So I would say that was my passport to get in Norwich as well, you know, after. It was great experience for sure. You know, I come from Greece. I had 1 year in Cardiff doing a master's degree. And I had worked previously in football, but always in the academies. So it was, yeah, great for me. It was a great experience, even if it was like a basic role to begin with. I found myself in the Premier League for the first time, and I remember like being there, and I remember someone from Swansea staff told me that you're not going to see football as you were seeing it before. After that, and it's actually true. So yeah, no, it was great. And of course, you know, after Swansea, I had 1 year there. Then I went, I was doing a bit of analysis and scouting together. Then I went back to Greece for a few months to work in Atromitos, more in the analysis space, I would say. But scouting was always in my mind and was what I wanted to do always. So when I had the offer from Swansea to start, from Norwich to start here as a technical scout, I didn't think a lot. I applied for that position, and yes, I'm still here now, 7 years later.
Yeah, because your role at Swansea was first team performance analysis, and then your first obviously role within Norwich was first team technical scout. Just sort of talk to me about the differences between the two and how being on the performance analysis side almost prepared you to be like a scout, but also like a really good scout as well.
Yeah, to be honest, like a lot of times, you know, the titles, they don't really indicate exactly what you're doing. So I wouldn't really, you know, pay a lot of attention on that. But at Swansea, effectively what I was doing basically was that I was, you know, watching a lot of games on video, and I was doing something in between analysis and scouting. So I was watching a lot of games on video. I was collecting a lot of data. And then we were trying to analyze those data, creating some benchmarks using like our own game model to try to identify maybe some players from abroad, especially that potentially can fit the game model. So it was something in between analysis and scouting, I would say. And then in Norwich, when I arrived here, in starting as a technical scout, the role was, you know, watching a lot of video, coordinating information, creating videos about targets, doing like all this kind of work, trying to not miss any information actually for the players that we were scouting. So yeah, then I started into like really more specializing into scouting, I would say, in Norwich, where Swansea was like something in between.
No, that's really useful. We're going to delve into game models. But just speaking about the title, I know the title thing's a really interesting thing, because like to people who actually work within the roles, it's not as big as what people on the outside who don't work within the roles kind of see. But have you always felt as though within the roles that you've worked in that you've had that kind of role clarity? Because I think it's something that we always kind of talk about in terms of having those clear defined objectives, those clear remits in terms of knowing where you kind of fit in alongside, whether that was a Norwich when Stuart was there, when Kieran was there, and obviously now Ben's there. We always felt that you've had that kind of role clarity and those kind of clear, that kind of clear remit in terms of when you're working within those multidisciplinary teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think titles and roles are completely different. Two completely different definitions. But yeah, in terms of roles, there always was clarity. But, you know, myself as a person, I always like to do more. So I was very happy here in Norwich that I could get different experience and I could, you know, like even do things that were a bit outside my role. But then I was starting getting experience. And then every year I could get more and more responsibility. And, you know, I was very lucky because I was working with people like Stuart, as you mentioned, but not only, of course, that you know, were allow me to have those experience and potentially like show some more of my potential here and gave me opportunities to grow. I think this is very important when you are in an organization.
No, 100%. And speaking of what you're currently doing now as head of emerging talent, I've heard you previously say that this is in regards to leading the scouting of players who are 17 to 21 years old, who are either ready for the first team or who need 1 or 2 years to get there domestically or internationally. Just kind of talk to me about how this works within Norwich and why this kind of strategy of really trying to find this talent within this sort of age bracket is really important to you guys and your long-term strategy.
Yeah, no, this is a role that, you know, sits in between, actually. We actually found that a lot of times there were players that are sit in between academy and first team that maybe, you know, fell into a gap, you know, and no one really picks them. So, and also like a club like Norwich that, you know, we are a self-sustainable club. So we really, and we have seen that we are doing that in the years. You know, we are trying to find young players' development either from the academy, to be honest, which is something that we have done, like having players from the academy and they're getting all the way through to the first team. And then after getting the experience here, a lot of times, you know, we have to sell them in in the Premier League or other like clubs. So this is similar. So emerging talent, like, you know, we're trying to find those players that you know, are young, emerging. We can potentially sign them with, you know, before like their value going very, very high. And then after getting the experience here, of course, you know, like in the end, they have to perform here. And then when, what we actually want, you know, we know that we're not the last step of a player. What we want is a player, you know, come here, and if he performs well, then at some point outgrown us, then of course, then we have to think about selling him in a bigger club. So, you know, what we are trying to find value on those ages in different markets, I would say. Even like less traditional markets, as we have done with South America for the last like 4 years. I know now after Brexit, it has become like a bit of a more mainstream market for the English clubs. But when we started, it was like 4 or 5 years ago, and you know, it wasn't really a market that a lot of clubs in England were tapping into, I would say. So we are trying to do that, and we're always trying to find value in different markets. And find like those emerging players that we can sign with potential, like undervalued, you know, in the market.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I think, like, when you speak to a lot of people, I think potentially, like, really around sort of that domestic side of thing, looking within that kind of age bracket, players who, within their own obviously academies or within other academies that aren't quite playing, that they believe that they can kind of get more out of. But then I think the uniqueness with you guys is the particular markets that you're kind of shopping in. Obviously, kind of Emi Buendia was kind of like the poster person for you guys at the time. And then obviously now, particularly, you're really looking at South America. And I know within the first team now, you have a couple of players there who are performing really well, that are within the confines that you kind of defined there, that are really doing well right now.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? We're trying to be open-minded. We believe that talent is everywhere. So we don't really want to be, you know, to be biased with markets. We're really trying to be creative and open-minded with the scouting that we are doing. So yeah, and emerging talent is, of course, massive for us.
And how much traveling do you get in as well, Mariela? How many players are you kind of seeing on a monthly basis, quarterly basis, annual basis, and how much? Where do you kind of lie in terms of like the live scouting versus data? And I know some people kind of love obviously going to the games and actually seeing a player in the flesh. And how does it kind of work with you guys as well, linked to that? Because I know some clubs kind of have a model whereby, I forgot who I was talking to, you kind of have a four eyes approach whereby, I don't know, like two people have to see a player live before they sign him, or they have like a committee in terms of the number of people who have to effectively sign off or see a player before they buy. How does it sort of work within Norwich?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a robust process, I would say, but also we're trying to be flexible. I think for us, having not a very, very big, you know, team of scouting, that enables us, or allow us actually to be very flexible. And like the communication is quite direct, which is great. You know, it was always like, even with Stuart before, very, very direct communication between everyone. But also now with, you know, with Ben and the scouting department. So I think this is always very good. So now in terms of data and live scouting and video scouting, I have to be honest, like what we are trying, and I'm trying to do as well, is trying to be efficient. I'm trying to use like all the information. And I think we live now in a world that we have a lot of information, and it's going to be like, how can I say, like stupid, I would say, if we don't actually use everything. So I don't really get this debate about, you know, data versus scouting, for example, versus live scouting. I think it's data and scout and video scouting and live scouting. I think we have to use everything to have a better informed decision, I would say. And yeah, we use data a lot in the process, either for filtering in the beginning, because you know, with data you can actually have like every action of a player and every game. So it's a quick way to filter, and like data can help you to indicate and then indicate to you like the interesting profiles for you. Of course, like, you know, we won't sign a player only based on that. But then we actually gain time and we become efficient of, you know, starting watching players on video and then live. Live is a massive part of it. Because of course you can see different things about the player, especially about the personality and the way he carries himself. But also, like, you know, live scouting is about the networking as well. It's about, you know, understanding the environment. It's about understanding the levels that you're watching in the culture. For example, for me, you know, being or going live in different countries, especially, for example, in South America, I think that it's massive because now I can understand the culture. I can understand the context better. And even when I watch a game on video, I can judge better, I believe, because, you know, I have this kind of things on my mind and I have experience. I have experiences. So, yeah, for me, everything is everything together, you know?
Yeah, and I think linked to that as well is and we kind of alluded to it earlier around game models in terms of the game model and how does the scouting, how does the game model that you want to play almost influence types of profiles of players that you want to scout? Who kind of leads and sets that game model at the football club? Obviously, you've been there since 2017. You've had different managers coming. Obviously, you've had sort of Stuart there as a sporting director. Now you have Ben in there as well. How does that game model kind of operate? How has that sort of changed within your time as well? And have you felt as though the profiles of players that you've kind of been looking at has changed? Or has it always kind of still been the same and always been structured?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, a clear game model always helped with scouting, especially with senior scouting. And we even see it, you know, with clubs that traditionally have a clear K model. Maybe some of them now have, you know, changed a bit. But for example, like even us, you know, here in the department, but I'm sure like if we discuss together, like when we see a player, we always had like, you know, this kind of thing that, oh, this player would fit in Barcelona, for example, or would fit in Ajax, or would fit in, I don't know, Atalanta is another club with clear game model for years. So I think, yeah, it helps, you know, like when even people outside the club can define the profiles, that means that, you know, you have a clear game model, and definitely that helps with scouting. For us here, you know, we are lucky that, you know, we had a very defined game model, especially in the beginning. Of course, you know, we have to be ready as a scouting department, you know, like for maybe a different coach, as you said, but you know, like we have quite, in general, like the profiles were like similar, and we know, especially looking to get in the Premier League, because this is the objective here, we know what we are looking for. To, you know, players that, of course, you know that physicality plays a big role, but also we are trying to be, you know, creative with that as well. So we're not trying to find, you know, players that are only physically capable to play in the level, but also, you know, have the technical characteristics and the tactical characteristics that we want from the positions. And in the end, you know, you need to have like a balanced squad. So yeah, I mean, as a scouting department, I have to be honest, we have to be ready for everything. Emerging talent as well is a little bit different. You're just trying to see the potential. Rather than how the player fits maybe right now in the squad, but more like how he would, you know, fit in the environment, the culture in the league and everything in the, you know, maybe in 1 year, for example, or, you know, in the future. So yeah, it helps. But also, like, you know, as a scouting department, we try to be ready for everything.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think linked to that as well, obviously, currently being in the Championship, you've been in the Premier League and you're obviously doing well recently, trying to push back into the Premier League. Do you almost feel as though, from a scouting or emerging talent perspective, that being in the Premier League versus being in the Championship kind of changes that, or do you feel as though it just always remains constant and always remains the same? Because you see some clubs that have a clear defined game model, maybe in the Championship, come up to the Premier League and it kind of changes a little bit and adapts a little bit differently, or?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, like we've seen in general, you know, not only with Norwich, but in general, we see even this year, you know, that the gap between the two leagues is growing. So yeah, it's never easy. And what you actually need is, you know, that you have a squad that, you know, when you get there, you're ready to actually compete and stay, rather than like changing everything, as we've seen like a lot of clubs have done recently, with, you know, some success, but the majority of that with, you know, not a lot of success in terms of staying there. But specifically, you know, the nature of the club is that we always have to look in two leagues, for the two leagues, and be prepared for both. So yeah, of course, if we are in the Premier League or if we are in Championship, change a little bit the requirements. But in the end, what we always target is players that are capable to, you know, to play with us in the Premier League.
No, 100%. Did you prepare any answers for what the footy are you lying for, or the two truths, one lie?
Oh yes, I'm ready for that, I think.
Oh, brilliant. I've been so bad at this recently, but it's the first one I've done in a while. But yeah, if you could please let me know your three statements and I'll guess them.
Okay, perfect. So, okay, let's start. So first one, I have played football in the first division in Greece.
Okay.
That's the first one. Second one is, I have played basketball until the age of 24 in a good level, again in Greece.
Okay.
And the third one is, I have represented Greece in a Euros final tournament playing field hockey.
Do you know what it is? I'm gonna say just straight off the bat, because I remember we were in Lisbon, and I know, and I think the second one you might have mentioned about the basketball, and I know Greek people are very good at basketball and they love, but I'm going to say the second one is true. Field hockey. Field hockey or first division Greek football.
Do you want a clue?
I'm going to say... So the third one is, you've done field hockey at a high level, did you say?
The third one was, I have represented Greece.
Greece, okay.
In a Euros playing field hockey.
In the Euros playing field hockey. Okay, I'm going to say that one is... In the Euros playing field hockey. I'm going to say that one is... That one is a lie and the first one is true. So the first two are true and the last one's a lie, but we'll find out towards the end. But yeah, just kind of going back into it. One thing I'm always kind of fascinated to find out from people, like when I speak to them within football, within their roles, is some of the challenges and some of the learnings. Like in terms of yourself, obviously, having been in the role for a while, what do you feel have sort of been the challenges and the main learnings for you?
Yeah, I would say that the challenges are the learnings as well. I mean, that's every job. I mean, for me, first of all, you know, the first challenge was when I moved abroad when I was younger for first time. But then, you know, I learned to adapt in something different. And I'm really glad that I'm now in England for the last 9 years. And I'm really enjoying the time here. But in terms of the role, of course, you know, we know football, you know, you have to adapt. You always are in environments that with a lot of changes, a lot of times. So you always have to adapt on those. Also, it's you know, my role, and I think scouting in general, but potential football in general, I would say, or professional football in general, you know, is 24/7. So you always have to be switched on. Potentially, you know, this sometimes influence a little bit your, you know, your balance with, you know, work and personal life. But I have to be honest with you, like, I don't even think about that. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, and I consider myself very, very lucky that I'm doing my passion, I would say, and something that, you know, I wake up every day and I don't remember saying to myself, like, oh, I have to go to the office now, or I have to catch this flight. You know, like, I'm always, you know, very, very happy and positive about it. So, you know, I don't really complain. There are challenges, of course, as with every job. But also in terms of the learnings, I'm a person that I really, you know, like learning. And, you know, the time that I stop learning, even if it's that in my role or, you know, in the industry in general, like, I would look to do something else. But to be honest, I think I'm somewhere that I learn every day, which is great. And I don't learn only about, you know, about football. I learn, like, you know, by traveling in different continents. Even I learn a lot about different cultures. I, you know, about communication. I interact a lot with people from different countries, different cultures. So yeah, no, the learnings are a lot. I mean, it's different for me now to really, you know, mention all of them. But you know, the learnings are a lot, and it's what gives me really the motivation to keep going, to be honest.
No, that's super useful. And obviously you mentioned there traveling and going around the world to different games. There must have been some players now that we kind of seen world football that are top talent that you might have seen at a game. Who's one of the best players that you've ever seen, like, quite early on in their career, and that we're currently seeing now doing really well?
Oof. Well, I think I need some more years for that, to be honest with you. But
any player that you saw and you just thought, wow.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are a few players that were standouts, to be honest. I watched, like, the last 2-3 years, for example, with even like youth national teams or like youth teams, for example, like Gavi at Barcelona. I remember watching him with, you know, Spain under 18s, and he came from the bench, and despite being probably the smallest in the pitch, I remember, like, it was again Spain against France under 18. He really dominated everything. It was like different tempo, you know. So yeah, this was excellent to watch. I mean, Zaire Emery as well from PSG was another one that when I watched first time with PSG under 19s, you know, you can see that he was different. So there's no surprises about them. And even in South America, you know, players that I watched before, like Julian Alvarez, for example. I remember it was like 4 years ago playing under 20s with Argentina, before even playing with River First Team. The same with Enzo Fernandez, actually. I watched them both with River Reserves, you know, and they stood out as well. So, yeah, it's good. It's good really to see those players, because, you know, you have the experience and you can translate better next players that you are seeing, you know, in similar levels as well.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting the point that you mentioned there about Gavi, because I think it's something that we see sometimes in this country where it's like a player is too small and they're not quite ready. But I've always found that in other countries, there's a thing whereby if you're good enough, then you're just good enough to play regardless of physicality, regardless of height or anything like that.
Yeah, I think to be honest, like, it's true that English football is very specific and very demanding physically. So you need to have like a certain physical and athletic capability, I would say. But you know, that doesn't mean, like, athleticism and physicality is not only about size, you know. I think for me the most important thing that you have to really see is the intensity. For me, I found that this is like an indicator that shows if a player can make it in the next level, I would say, and this is one thing that all of those players that I actually mentioned had from very young age. They had a different tempo and a different intensity.
No, it's a really good point, because even one of a player that I love watching every time he plays against my team is Bernardo Silva. And if you were to see someone as small as him, you'd say there's no way someone like him could play in the Premier League. But you watch him play every time they play the ball into him. Like, no one can ever get near him, and he can turn easily. He's very intense in the duels. So no, it's quite an interesting point.
Yes, of course. And in the end, like, you know, now we are talking about, you know, we're talking about some players that are like high level. Yeah. Of course, like, you know, in the end, you have to see your game model and understand your context as well. A lot of times here we say, and I think it's also a key of scouting, like, that, you know, he's a great player, but he's not the right player for us. Mm-hmm. So in the end, you have to understand which player fit you with your context and doesn't fit.
Yes, now time to reveal your answers. I feel like I've messed it up and got it wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think you were close. You do remember well about basketball.
Yeah.
I did play basketball for many years, and I have to be honest, like, actually it was the sport that I played the most. And you're right, like, in Greece is very popular, I would say, together with football. In terms of football, I did play football. I play more futsal, I have to be honest with you. But I did play football, but I didn't play in the first division in Greece. And I did play less than basketball, for sure. I did play for a few years, but not. It wasn't like my main sport was always basketball. In terms of playing, in terms of hockey, I have played the least. So I play hockey, I think, for probably 3 years when I was quite old. I started playing maybe when I was, I can't even remember, but I think it was like 21 potentially, 22. And I was quite lucky because. When I went there, starting training, Greece were actually organizing a Euros. So after a few months, I remember I was called in the national team to play as a goalkeeper. I'm going to be honest; it's not a massive achievement, just because field hockey is not very famous in Greece.
Yeah,
in general, no.
Field hockey is not going to be.
No.
Yeah.
It's true. Like, if we were organizing it, we were probably playing ever in the tournament. But it was a good experience in the end, you know, to represent Greece and represent my country. A bit easier as well than representing probably my country in football or basketball. So, yeah, no, it was a good experience. And it's always, you know, something that tricks everyone, because I haven't really played a lot of field hockey.
No. Lost that one, but I'll have to bring it back in the next episode with a future guest. But yeah, the last question I ask all guests is, what the footy needs to change or happen within your space?
Yeah, no, the first thing that comes in my mind, to be honest, without sounding potentially like too political, is something that I think that has to change in the whole society. And you know, football is the micrography of it. And I think we need a football with, you know, like, no racism, no abuse, and no violence. I think I don't want to really go into the technical things, because I think for me, this is fundamental. So that's the one thing that I would change for sure.
No, 100% agree with that. And hopefully more is done. I think it takes a big effort from the governing bodies, I think. Governing bodies definitely need to do a little bit more, and harsher penalties, harsher punishments. But yeah, no, Mariella, thank you so much for your time. I know you've been meaning to do this for a while, but so many gems and lessons in there for people to unpack. But no, thank you so much for your time and agreeing to do this.
No, Paul, thanks a lot. And no, really enjoyed the discussion.
Brilliant. Thank you for listening. I hope you loved it. And if you did, give the pod a follow and a 5-star review, and tell a friend to tell a friend. See you in a fortnight for the next episode. Let's go.
What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
Knew Sam Allardyce liked me, but I didn't know it was to that extent.
Imagine being a kid in primary school. Now it's a foot in Arsenal.
Powerful people, and I think they need to recognise that, but then also they need to be represented the
football
right way.
Sport in general is nothing without fans.
Based on, you know, one single source of revenue alone, that being the TV.
Let's just win this to appease the fans.